Ben and Woods on a Friday. It is a Friar Friday. The Padres are in Arizona getting ready to open a three-game series against the defending National League champion, Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yep.
First meeting. I think this is the last NL West team that they had yet to face. Obviously, they faced the Dodgers, Giants, Rockies. Yeah, so this is it. They'll have seen the entire division after this weekend. Dylan Cease on the mound tonight. We got a 5:40 Eco Water SoCal pregame show, 6:40 first pitch. And joining us right now for our manager's report. And the manager's report, of course, brought to you by San Diego County Credit Union. It's not big bank banking. It's better. Mike Schilt is back with us here on 97.3 The Fan. Skip, sorry I missed you last week when I was on my my golf vacation, but good to talk to you as always.
Yeah, good talking to you. Hope you hit them straight.
Yeah, do you play any golf?
Poorly.
Poorly.
Yeah,
that's all right.
I don't play much. I like to get out. I'm good for 9 holes, and I'm over it.
That's the way I feel. 9 to 12 holes is actually the sweet spot. Golf really should be 12 holes, the front six and the back six. I'll go to my grave defending that, actually. Well, how's Arizona treating you this morning?
It's beautiful. Just about to head to the ballpark.
Really, I thought maybe two of the most important starting pitching outings you got the last couple of games against the Reds from Yu Darvish coming off the injured list with 5 shutout innings, and then really seeing Joe Musgrove looking like Joe Musgrove. Can you give me some thoughts on what you saw from both of those guys and how I assume you're anticipating getting more of the same from them as they go through the rotation the next time?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to need more of those starts. We expect to get them. Those guys expect to give them. It was tremendous, you know, the timing of it, obviously. And then, you know, having you back, we'll start with him, you know, just him back, maybe on the mound, that presence, and then the stuff that came with it. Everything hitting, breaking balls were good. Excuse me. And, man, it was good to see him pitch up there. And, it was, you know, we didn't know what we were going to get relative to the number of bullets he had. So we're thinking, you know, maybe possibly 3 to 4. If he had any stress, you know, we were going to have to adjust. So for him being able to grab 5 was really important. And then it actually set us up also good for the next day with our bullpen. And then Joe was, like you said, Joe was fantastic. He looked like vintage Joe Musgrove. And he was really, really good. Might have liked everything. His fastball velocity was up. He was throwing it where he wanted. You know, throwing ball inside, good curveball, slider. So he was really good.
Talking to Skipper Mike Schilt here on Ben and Woods this morning. Something I was interested in hearing about is your job as the manager. You know, you got to manage everybody differently. Everybody, you know, 26 different personalities in there. And, you know, everyone kind of expected Jackson Merrill to hit a little bit of a lull, right? It happens to the best players in the game. There are guys that get sent down to the minors and that have been 10-year veterans. It's crazy. You see it all the time, Skip. But he's scuffling a little bit right now. Conversely, you got Xander Bogaerts, who veteran. He's scuffling as well. What's the difference in the way that you manage those guys and talking them through what's going on with their swing or in their slumps right now?
It's a good question. Yeah, the game's hard, and they've both had moments this year. Of course, Jackson got off to a really good start, and Bogey's, you know, had some moments where he's been really good for us. And, you know, so I think, you know, relative to Jackson, it's both is just support, right? Like, look, we got you, go play. You know, you need anything. I think it's more about, like, what are you when you're doing it well? You know, make sure you have the right mind frame of how you compete when you're in a good place. And that's really, you know, the message and how you deliver it is based on the individual. But, you know, with Jackson, you know, being a younger player clearly to the league, it's you just want to make sure that he's, you know, not trying to do too much and just appreciates what he's doing and stays with the right approach that allowed him to have the success of the start. But there's not a lot of reminder for him, because he really has got his good head on his shoulders and sees the game well and so you trust what that's going to look like. And Bogey's, you know, shoot, heck, you know, for about 10 days there, he was swinging the bat really well and putting up some good numbers. So, you know, he got him a day off before this scheduled day off yesterday, and he'll be ready to go, you know, today. So I got cops in both those cats.
It's our manager's report brought to you by SDCCU with Mike Schilt, who is in Arizona. Padres opening a three-game series tonight. And I did hear you say, Mike, earlier this week that you were going to use the off day to check in with your AAA coaching staff on Donovan Solano. So how did that check-in go? And with Manny now, you know, playing third a little more regularly, that gives you some different possibilities at the DH position. What are we going to see kind of going forward here?
Well, we're going to still find out. I didn't have a chance to actually get a hold on their playing yesterday, so a little bit of inability to get a hold of them. So, but I am on the way to the ballpark and reach out to some guys. But I've heard good, you know, read the reports, and I've known Donovan since he was 16 when he first got in the game in rookie ball. So, you know, I think he's taking good at bats. He's a professional hitter, and you know, it's just a matter of when he's ready, and then we'll figure out what the lineup looks like relative to when he's ready to come up.
All right, Skip. So I had a day off on Wednesday. I took my family to Disneyland, so I didn't get to come in. I didn't get to come in and talk about Mike Schilt, the gambler, and going with Manny. I missed all of it. So I was, and I heard your post. I heard all of it, but I wanted to ask you because I'm very selfish, and I was like, I got to talk to him about that move. I got to say, when it happened, I thought it was the right. I really did. I love it. Now I'm a huge Manny Machado guy, and I always want him up with the bases loaded. I had never heard of that rule before. I've never seen that happen. The balk thing that happened with Waldron, the game before, I'd never known that they had to announce. These rules are insane, and I watch a ton of baseball. I've never heard of either of these, but let's talk specifically about that decision. It seemed like you knew exactly what you wanted to do. It was a very decisive decision on your part.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. In our ball talk of week before, you know, catcher interference had come up in a game. I mean, heck, we've seen it more. You know, it's crazy how often we see it now, but because guys trying to steal strikes and get close. But anyway, so Jim McHugh, our advanced guy, and does a lot of things really well for us, in our ball talk said, hey, just want to make sure everybody knows that's a live play and you know, keep playing it. And, you know, we have the opportunity to choose the result of the play, which was, you know, a nice reminder. And then so I just went out to Corey. Let me just make sure I get this straight, which I make sure he was getting it straight too.
Yeah.
Choices, obviously, take the out and the run, so there's two outs and Toddy's a second, or take the run up the board and bases are loaded. We got one out with Manny Machado, and he's like, yep, that's right. I said, well, we're going to take Manny. I don't know. It just seemed like a pretty easy decision to me. And everybody's heads goes to, oh, he could hit him double play.
Yeah.
He could do anything. Yeah, he could also do the ball in the gap, you know? So I don't know. I just choose to believe in our guys, and in that circumstance, it was, you know, Manny Machado with the base loaded with one out. I feel pretty good about it. Yeah, I knew loosely, not exactly the math of the run expectancies, so I had an idea about that supporting the decision a little bit in real time. But it was really about just having confidence in Manny.
I knew what you were going to do. I mean, Manny, that kind of made it easy for you. I thought I had no doubt what you were going to do in that situation. My question, though. This is more of the hypothetical. If you hadn't already been up 1-0 and that run would have given you the lead, would that have changed the equation a little bit?
No.
No?
I think what possibly could have changed the equation if it was the 8th going into the 9th.
Yeah.
You know, later in the game, okay, you know, we got
less time for the other team to come back. Yeah.
Correct.
Interesting.
Personnel's got to be a big part of it, you know.
He believes in everybody.
I know. And my co-host here made the point. He said, you know, Mike Schilt can't get on the airwaves and can't do his post-game pressers every day and talk about how much he believes his players, and you do,
right.
and then not do that. You just can't do it. Like, not that you pigeonhole yourself, but that's. I feel like that's genuinely who you are.
That's right. Yeah, that's very accurate. Now, if one of you two were hitting, we might have.
You don't want me up with the bases loaded, man.
Believe me, you wouldn't have even been able to find us if we were hitting.
Right. So, you know, it's case by case.
So, Mike, you've been around this team, obviously, more than just this season. You saw the last couple of years, and while many things I think we've seen as fans already this year, some comebacks, some resiliency, some big innings, things that we kind of missed last year, The one thing we're still waiting for, it was that long winning streak. It took forever for the team to win four in a row last year. You've gotten the three gamer, but you know, what does it take? You had a 17 gamer there with the Cardinals there in your last season. What does it take, besides a little bit of luck, for a team to really put together a long streak, and why haven't we seen it yet from your team?
Yeah, it's interesting about streaks for me. I look at it, which I just answered your question, obviously, in a more holistic manner. So, they're if you play the game consistently in all phases the right way and have the, which is clearly not easy to do, but, you know, what we're looking to do, and that's required to play that consistent baseball. And you're not giving anything away, and you're taking everything you can in competition, and you do that every night, and you're dedicated to that in every phase of the game, you're going to give yourself the best chance to win. You do that consistently enough, you got a chance to stay on the good side of streaks. But really, for me, I think it's a little bit of a trap to think and worry about when are we going to win six in a row, seven or eight in a row, nine in a row. I want to win every game, so we win every game. We put together good streaks. But for me, it's really about winning series. And I talk about this a fair amount, and we're still, you know, we're getting better at it. Clearly, we won three series in a row, and we split a series. They got swept, which clearly is not fun, and then won a series. So the consistency of winning a series is important because you want to get better as the game goes, the series goes. And if you think about winning series, well, what the heck happens in the playoffs? You play series. So it's really about figuring out how to win as many series as possible. And then over the course of a season, you do that, your record's going to be in a pretty good place. The streaks are nice. We needed it in 21, the 17 in a row. But it was the exact same mantra, thought process, mentality, communication, whatever you want to say that year with, you know, multiple injuries, just trying to find our groove, just keep playing, keep getting better, keep putting it together. And people said, why can't you just do that? Well, it's easier said than done. And, you know, eventually we got to a point where we hit our groove. We were beating ourselves with walks, and, you know, we were going to play really good defense that year. We had five gold gloves. And then we put it together. And, you know, then, of course, also in a longer streak, you know, with the pitching, it's you know, you can't run the same closer out, the same setup guy out. So you have to get contributions from all of your bullpen in big key moments. And that's going to be a challenge to get. And we were able to do that. But the point being ultimately is we just were going to play good baseball consistently. And then wham, it just hit. And we took off and won the 17 in a row. But longer answer to your question, that's kind of how I view the world relative streaks. And if you're playing that kind of baseball, you stay on the good side of them.
Last thing for me, Mike, we discussed it last hour, and I don't think Player of the Month awards are that important, but they gave the NL Reliever of the Month award to one of your old players, Ryan Helsley. He had a really good month for the Cardinals, but I would argue he didn't have as good of a month as your closer did, Robert Suarez. I wanted to give you a chance to talk about what Suarez has done, especially lately, with the consistency he's given you in the ninth inning and doing it, you know, basically with one pitch a lot of the time, that fastball, and just daring guys to beat them. He's not been able to, you know, no one been able to beat him.
He's been tremendous. I mean, I don't know there's enough superlatives to say it. He's, like you said, he's been an attack, very convicted in what he's doing, throwing an elite pitch with command, and just going right at guys. And, you know, he's been able to be a big part of our club, and, you know, it's nice to have a guy down there at the end that you can rely on. He's been tremendous, and, you know, it's, you know, good for Hells. You know, he's got a nice arm, done a nice job. So it's hard to say, it's hard to believe somebody was any better than Robert Suarez over the course of the month. But, you know, he's been tremendous for us, and I just love his slow heartbeat and how he goes about it and how he gets after it.
Well, good luck on the road trip, Arizona and Chicago. Hopefully a winning one, and we'll talk to you next Friday when you guys come back home, I believe, to face the Los Angeles Dodgers. Going to be back in town, so that'll be a fun one. Thanks for your time again, Skip.
Yeah, of course. You guys have a nice day.
Appreciate you, too.
Mike Schilt, manager of the Padres, our manager's report, brought to you by San Diego County Credit Union. It's not big bank banking. It's better. So he would not have gone with us in that situation. He would have taken the run.
I mean, if you're going to make the decision between me or you, I think he knows probably what to do.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I'd go with you as well.
Yeah.
Now, if he needed someone to, you know, break 90 on the golf course, I'd hope he'd go with me.
Yeah, 100%.
On that one.
I mean, I'm capable, but it's not going to happen very often.
He's a nine-hole guy like you are.
Yes.
He doesn't want to play 18.
Yeah, it's hard to hold my interest when I start playing poorly.
All right, let's react to that. We've got a couple of segments left. Everyone always enjoys Mike Schilt and those conversations. I do as well. So we'll get to that when we come back. Do not go anywhere. We got also a pair of Legion tickets to give away to wrap up our week next year with Ben Woods after traffic on 97.3 The Fan. Our thanks again to Padres manager Mike Schilt joining us on a Friar Friday. Paulie, put you on the spot here. Do we know who this afternoon's player guest will be on the Gwynn and Chris program?
It'll be one Jake Cronenworth.
Oh, I feel a little bit cheated on.
You just talked to him
last Friday.
But he did hit a grand slam in his most recent at-bat, I believe.
Probably very happy to pick up the phone today.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little easier than when we had him after he grounded into a double play and was like 0 for 3.
Yeah.
I blamed myself. And he blamed a guy in the front row in Colorado that always comes and he always gets knocks.
That's right.
Yeah, you weren't here for that.
And he wasn't there?
He wasn't there the day he hit in the double play. He was supposed to be there the day he came on. I think he got a sack fly that day, maybe a knock late in the game.
Jake,
it was the game that they lost.
They lost that, yeah.
I'm assuming we'll be at first base as normal today.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like Donovan Solano is with the team at the moment or will be in the lineup tonight. Unless Mike Schilt was doing a real,
coy
and trying to, downplay things. Sounds like if they're going to make that decision, it hasn't been made yet. Now, I will say, if they needed Donovan Solano, Major League Baseball teams have the ability to get guys up from AAA very quickly. I don't know if they're in El Paso right now or on the road, but either way, Arizona is a hub stop from just about every spot in the Pacific Coast League.
Could be en route right now.
Yeah, they could make the decision in 5 minutes and have him there long before the game starts. So that doesn't mean that we won't see Donovan Solano. Just doesn't sound like that decision has been made. I had the thought maybe he was already there, sitting in a hotel room, got the call up yesterday and was ready to go. Doesn't sound like at least that has been the case yet. Now,
well, you said if they need him, and as Matthew says, and I agree, they need him.
I did hear a little bit of AJ Cassaville on yesterday with Gwynn and Chris, and he did mention that a very valid use of the DH, now that Manny is playing more at third, will be to get some of the regulars off their feet. Xander got a day off on Wednesday. Manny will continue to need probably more regular days off than he usually gets.
Days off or days off from the
field? Days off from the field, where he'll be the designated hitter. And you haven't really had a chance to get Jake, Tatis, or Kim days off at all this season.
Yesterday was a day off. We're good.
True. I'm not saying today is the day.
Yeah, yeah.
But today against Slade.
Ciccone.
Right-hander, correct?
Right-hander.
I mean, I don't know that I want to see Graham Pauly DHing again.
You know who else is? Chris Ello does not want to see him DHing.
Well, certainly not batting fifth. I agreed with Chris yesterday in the round table that a lineup, even if you can make it lefty-righty all the way through, putting Graham Pauly right now at the fifth spot just seems to be a mistake. You're putting together some offense early, and he's kind of a... He's been a dead spot in the order, and that can change in one at bat. I do understand that.
The five spot has been a dead spot in the order for this team the entire season. It was Kim to start.
He was off to a slow start.
And then it was Xander.
Last few days after Jurickson went to the leadoff spot.
It was, I think, Profar's hit fifth. He's been fine pretty much everywhere you've hit him.
For the short time he was there, he was good.
Yeah.
And then it was Pauly.
Pauly, yeah.
So not been the best spot in your order.
Yeah.
But they, you know, the other options are if Manny's going to continue to bat cleanup, you do think, you know, lefty would be a good option if they can do it. But then who are your other options?
Paul says, man, you guys love days off. I don't know that. Like, the only getting Manny off his feet from third base because of his elbow surgery, that makes sense to me, absolutely. And but he will be in the lineup to swing it.
But moving Merrill up as a lefty, he's slumping right now.
He's slumping right now as well.
Wade doesn't scream five hitter to you also, which just doesn't leave you with a lot of good protection options for Manny Machado right now. As he's heating up, he's going to see less to hit until someone can start hitting behind him in the order. That could be a problem. Can't be? I mean,
maybe.
He's been the most consistent. He's right-handed, but maybe you think about him in the five slot at some point.
Yeah, I don't know lineup construction from a hole in the ground. I really don't. Every time I see him roll a lineup out, it usually makes sense, but I understand the logic behind most of the moves. You can only do what you have the players to do. Like you're hamstrung in that you don't have a super deep bench, and those days where you're running out three guys that are platoon guys or, you know, bench pieces, defensive replacements, well, when they're all in the lineup at the same day, that's the one I go, this is tough.
It did feel for a while like you had a super deep lineup. When Profar and Merrill were both hitting, you know, like 7-8, and they were hitting really well, you felt like, ooh, this is a lengthy lineup.
Yes.
Now that Merrill's gotten cold and Profar's been moved to the leadoff spot, all of a sudden it looks like the bottom of the order is kind of, not producing, and there's not a lot there at the moment. Now that changes. Xander starts hitting, that changes. If Paulie ever did hit the way we've seen him hit at spring training and, you know, the minor leagues and the fall league, yeah, he would be a great guy for the bottom half of your order. But he's not there yet.
Were you surprised to see Ha-Sung Kim in the 8-hole the other day?
A little bit.
I was too, a little bit.
But then I would always be excited when he's up.
Feeling correct.
Like, okay, we got a shot here in the eighth spot.
And I think what he was trying to do was do the righty-lefty matchup and then also make sure you didn't have black hole, Tyler Wade at the bottom of your lineup. But, and again, to Tyler's credit, he finds a way to get in big spots. He's done that all year. But he's a bench piece. He's not a guy that should probably be starting every single day. Then again, you know, I also felt that about Jerickson Profar to kick off the season. You know, a million-dollar deal was like, oh, cool, this will be a nice little piece for the Padres to have. He's been outstanding in every way. So he's your leadoff hitter right now. And I don't think you tinker with that at all.
And despite what feels like a struggling offense, I will point out again, Padres are third in baseball in hits. The Padres are third in baseball in runs scored.
Yep.
The Padres are ninth in baseball in home runs. They are fourth in total bases. They are eighth in walks. I mean, all these numbers scream great offense. And yet, none of us really feel it like fans. It feels like they've got a lot of holes in the lineup. The guys are struggling, and yet the numbers don't really back that up.
And we did speak about this week that we would like a few more feasts instead of the feast or famine. It's been mostly famine. So, I mean,
with a little bit of feast.
It hasn't really torched their numbers over the course of the first month of the season.
It really hasn't. So, yeah, the pitching is going to be clutch this weekend and preventing runs, playing crisp, clean defense. You do feel like you have enough offense in Arizona to get the job done in any iteration. But the Solano deal, it makes too much sense to have him come up and be your DH right now. I don't know. I don't know what the holdup is with some of these moves, but I'm not going to pretend that I do.
All right. New piece from Ken Rosenthal on whether the Padres, and you don't want to hear this, could be sellers at the trade
already?
Deadline.
Jeez,
who they may
man.
Be selling.
It's May 3rd.
I know.
Jeff
Passan
yesterday.
Yep, and now Ken Rosenthal today. I don't want to necessarily end the week on a bummer note. Well, we still have things.
That's true.
To end the week on a positive note. That's all
coming
up.
We should play the song instead.
Next, with Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. I forgot to mention to Mike Schilt. And by forgot, I actively chose not to mention to Mike Schilt the suggestion I received yesterday from Steve in Coronado. And I will credit Steve being a very enthusiastic and detailed Padres fan. Woods, I got this long, well, it's kind of an email that he posted as a mention on my Twitter feed, but Steve is convinced that the Padres are terrible bunters, and they need to improve. He says, currently it's embarrassing when the Padres hitters even attempt to lay one down. They simply look amateurish and do not have the skill developed. Here are my grades for Padres hitters attempting to lay down a bunt. Yeah. Followed by a remedy. Hang on. Jacob John Cronenworth, F. Ha-Sung Kim, F. Manuel Arturo Machado, F.
Why
try to lay down a bunt?
Why in the F would you have Manny Machado lay down a bunt?
Kyle Harris Higashioka, F.
What's with the middle names?
Luis Gennaro Campusano, F. Xander Jan Bogaerts, F. What maybe it's happening? Jan, probably.
Jan.
Jurickson Bartholomeus Porrofar, D. Fernando Gabriel Tatis Jr., D. Mm. Jose Enrique Azocar, D. Eggy Rosario, D. Tyler Dean Wade, C. Jackson Peter Merrill, I have not seen him try. Graham Austin Pauley, I have not seen him try. So those are the grades. Now here comes the remedy. Are you ready? Padres hitters are woefully inadequate with this essential skill of laying down a bunt, but it can be developed. Here is the remedy. Every day at Petco Park, each Padre hitter develops the skill of bunting the baseball for 20 minutes. On the road, each Padre hitter develops the skill for 10 minutes. Each time they are graded with those grades with trends sent to the manager, Mike Schilt. At Petco Park, 25 pitches from the machine, 5 102-mile-an-hour fastballs.
Are you trying to
five
kill
sliders,
me? You're
five curveballs, five sinkers, and five breaking pitches. Each bunt executed, the player gets 4 points, with 100 points being the highest grade. On the road, 12 pitches from the machine, 4 102-mile-an-hour fastballs, four sliders, four curveballs. Each bunt executed, the player gets 8.3 points, with 99.6 points being the highest grade.
I hate you.
How dare you, dude?
In the beginning,
you should see my
in the beginning,
heart
they're
right
going
now.
To be wearing protective gear because you can get seriously injured learning how to bunt, especially with 102-mile-an-hour fastballs from the machine. Later on, though, without
sounds
protective
like good,
gear.
Sounds like a good use
in
of time.
In only 2 months, we will see a new dimension of winning on this team, courtesy Steve in Coronado.
It's weird because you would think that the good teams in Major League Baseball would, if it bred, here's the thing about baseball, Steve. They know what they're doing, and they know the best capable the way to score runs. The easiest is to not give away outs. Giving away outs inherently is pretty dumb. Now, there are exceptions to every single rule. There really are. There are exceptions. There are times when a sacrifice bunt potentially is needed. The San Diego Padres are currently tied for sixth place in sacrifice bunts with four. This season, the worst team in baseball, the Chicago White Sox, have the most with eight. The Cardinals have, they're tied with the Cardinals at eight. Then the Pittsburgh Pirates, then the New York Mets, then the Oakland A's. Then the team we face tonight, the Arizona Diamondbacks with four. It may be, in your opinion, a lost art form. There's a reason that it's a lost art form, because it doesn't work enough to make it to where you would want to go spend hours and hours and hours and hours taking 102-mile-an-hour fastballs learning how to
bunt. And while I do appreciate Steve's detail, here's where it loses me. If you did that 20 minutes per day, that's 2+ hours a week that you're spending just on bunting. When I think there's actually more important things you could be doing, analyzing video of the pitchers you're facing, other skills that you could be working on that are actually more valuable right now in baseball than devoting that much time toward bunting. Remember, all these guys, they're playing 162 games or close to it. It's an exhausting season. And to add this to what is already an exhaustive schedule, I think would do more damage than good, even if you did improve your bunting skills overall.
Ben says he appreciates Steve's passion for the game. I bet Steve hates the DH as much as I do. I don't know that. I'm one of the most passionate baseball fans I know. And I like to bunt. Why? Because I'm a terrible hitter. Bunting is for terrible hitters. On no planet, should the first seven names you read ever square to bunt a baseball. Never.
Should Fernando Tatis Jr. ever lay down a bunt the rest of his career?
Not a sacrifice bunt, Paulie. If he looks up and the third baseman is playing deep short and the shortstop standing behind second base and third base is wide open, drop one down, get you a knock. I have no problem with that. No problem with that. But sacrifice bunting and giving away outs is dumb. It's dumb.
I also have to throw in the extensive scoring system, which I'm always a big fan of complicated scoring systems. But when each bunt is worth 8.3 points with a maximum of 99.6 being the highest grade,
yeah.
Steve, you might be getting a little too in the weeds here terms of the bunting practice. If you're going to ask Tyler Wade, and Tyler Wade has laid down a few for base hits.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, practice it a couple of times. I'm sure he does. He tries to drag him. He's been praised for that skill. You gave him a C. I would think Mike Schilt would give him a much higher grade on what he does. It's still hard to do, even if you practice it against the guys that have a ton of movement and deception and how hard they throw. It's never going to be an easy skill. This is not the old days where the fastest fastballs were 91 and they could bunt them with ease, you know, in 1968. It's always going to be hard, no matter how much you practice, to bunt a cutter that is coming in at 97 and dancing through the zone. It just isn't as easy as it was when we were growing up. That's just the truth.
Well, and, again,
and so now when you try to lay down a bunt, you're also not only are you giving up an out, but you're trying to do something that is actually really hard against really good pitchers, and you may not even get the bunt down to begin with.
Yeah, again, time and place, certainly. It's you've seen it, you know. It's not like they haven't tried it and sacrificed. And I think it's led to one run this season, if my memory serves, maybe one. So 1-for-4, you know, in that regard. Love the sac fly. I love a productive out. A productive out is fantastic, but giving one. Here, take this. I'm going to give you this one. And you only have 27 to play with.
But, you know, a sac fly, if it's hit really well, can be a home run.
That's exactly right.
A bunt that's hit really well may turn into a single.
Jerkson almost bunted one for a double the other day. But again, that drove me nuts, too. The guy's 3-for-3, and he's up there, and he's laying one down. Look, element of surprise, I get it. Like I said, time and place for everything. But when I look at the San Diego Padres, or really any baseball team, the last thing I think of is, we got to get some guys in here to lay a bunt down. Really, I mean, honestly, it's not going to win you more ball games. And if it did, they would do it more. Honestly, that's what it boils down to.
They like winning.
They like winning
as much or more than we all do. 100%. They want to win.
It's more important to them in every different facet, financially, for everything.
Prestige, everything.
Yes, you want to win games. Yeah. If they thought it would help, if they thought it would help. That practice,
they'd be light. They'd be doing it more. They'd be doing 2 hours a day on bunting if they thought that was the difference in making them win.
There is no question about it.
All right, who does Ken Rosenthal have the Padres possibly trading? Get to that and some things Ben likes after our last check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So in his new column this morning in The Athletic, Ken Rosenthal talks about who could be surprise sellers at the trade deadline. Teams you're not really thinking about right now. Like last year, the Mets were a surprise seller and got rid of a bunch of their players at the trade deadline. And as he goes through the column, he gets to the NL West and he says, not the Rockies. Wouldn't be a surprise if they sold, and they don't really have anyone to sell that anyone's interested in anyway. So he starts going through the other teams, like the Giants. He goes, after all they've committed, they're pretty much invested. They can't really sell at this point. The Diamondbacks, well, they're probably going to get healthy and expect to be contending. If everything went wrong for them, then maybe they'd sell off a little, you know, cash to save some of their investment, but they're probably not selling either. Dodgers, no, not going to happen. So that leaves him with the San Diego Padres. The thinking here is that at least one team in the NL West will flop. The Padres, considering their lack of depth, are operating with perhaps the thinnest margin for error. Their massive investments in Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Xander Bogaerts perhaps will make them more likely to buy than sell. But payroll was a concern all offseason, and they could move Dylan Cease when he is still eligible for two pennant races and possibly get back as much as they traded him for.
Maybe even my least favorite segment we've ever done.
I'm just
trading Dylan Cease.
And that was Ken Rosenthal's take as to possible surprise sellers and guys who could be on the market this summer in Major League Baseball. Doesn't mention anyone else that the Padres would be talking about trading this summer.
It's like they're willing it to happen. Listen, I hope my point, did you get my point yesterday in the roundtable? Chris Ella was talking about, I need to see, you know, 50, 60 games from these guys to see if they're worthy of going out and adding a bat or whatever it may be. And my point, and I wasn't trying to be a jerk at all. I hope that nobody took it that way. My point is, when you commit long-term to several players on your team, I feel like you're kind of always in it. You know, if the Padres are hanging around, I just feel like this team is going to constantly be looking to add. Now, look, if we're out of it, and we're out of it, and you don't see yourself re-signing a Dylan Cease, okay. I mean, it's not the
I mean, you got him for next year.
You got him for next year, too.
But Kim, he's a free agent.
Free agent.
You'd be talking about him if you're out of it, for sure.
Yeah, if you're out of it. But if the Padres hang around, I don't need to see some 10, 12, 15-game winning streak to think, you know, this team needs to add. No, they need to add, period. If they're hanging around, yes, I'll be pissed if you don't. And A.J. Preller is really, last year, really the first year he's ever bought really around the margins and didn't make a huge, huge splash at the deadline.
I will let Annie and Elston tackle the rest of this. They're coming up next. I don't know if it's the song or just the regular version.
What did you guys
like? I like the song.
Let's finish with some things. The AI song version of Things Ben Likes.
I like a juicy, sweet strawberries. I like a good marching band. I like a good thin pancake. I like a Nickelback song or two. I like a barbecue chicken pizza. I really like those seeds. I like a midnight buffet. I kind of like the smell of soft scrub, like more of a small derriere. I like cake, I like it. I like both the hamburger and a cheeseburger. I like clocks, I like how I've kind of set up my life. I like grasshopper pie, oh no. I like a creamy. I like good firm banana. I like just looking out the sea. I like moist. I like curry. Salad, fried Brussels sprouts. I like more of a firm feel like popcorn. I like Nordstrom. I do like musicals. I like pepperoni. I like nice hotels. I like Nick getting the start today.
Especially when the Padres beat
him. I like Nick Steph Curry. Steph Curry, I like that song. I like Squirt.
Oh.
I like steak. I like San Diego State. I like a straight up Paul Abdul. I like the
now. We played that earlier in the show, and you're like, we're talking about like this is created with AI, and you just give them a prompt.
Yeah, can you change the format?
Yeah,
though?
Woods was like, I want
style.
I want 90s grunge, Ben.
Oh, really,
well, ladies and gentlemen. Ask and you shall receive.
I like a juicy, sweet strawberry.
Just like Nickelback.
I like a good marching band.
It's identical
like
Nickelback. The words are a little better and deeper.
I like Nickelback song, too.
I like barbecue, chicken pizza. I really like those seeds.
God, it sounds just like them. Holy smokes. Pretty scary.
It is really
pretty.
I don't like it.
I really don't either. It's unsettling.
All right, we will be back Monday morning at 6 a.m., or maybe just pretty decent AI versions of the three of us. We'll be back Monday morning at 6 a.m., and you'll never know. We just, we're off on the golf course, and someone else is
handling
our show at some point.
Working on that right now.
Do we still get paid? Probably not. That's the problem. All right, Annie and Elston are coming up next. It is a Friar Friday continuing. Jay Cronenworth later on with Gwen and Chris. Four. Our executive producer and imaging director, Paul Reindl. For Stephen Woods, I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great weekend from all of us at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody. I forgot to mention to Mike Schilt. And by forgot, I actively chose not to mention to Mike Schilt the suggestion I received yesterday from Stephen Coronado. And I will credit Steve being a very enthusiastic and detailed Padres fan. Woods, I got this it's kind of an email that he posted as a mention on my Twitter feed, but Steve is convinced that the Padres are terrible bunters and they need to improve. He says, currently it's embarrassing when the Padres hitters even attempt to lay one down. They simply look amateurish and do not have the skill developed. Here are my grades. for Padres hitters attempting to lay down a bunt. Yeah. Followed by a remedy. Hang on. Jacob John Cronenworth, F. Ha-Sung Kim, F. Manuel Arturo Machado, F.
Why
try to lay down a bunt?
Why in the F would you have Manny Machado lay down a bunt?
Kyle Harris Higashioka, F.
What's with the middle names?
Luis Gennaro Campusano, F. Xander Jan Bogaerts, F. What maybe it's happening? Jan, probably.
Jan.
Jurickson Bartholomeus Profar, D. Fernando Gabriel Tatis Jr., D. Jose Enrique Azocar, D. Eggy Rosario, D. Tyler Dean Wade, C. Jackson Peter Merrill, I have not seen him try. Graham Austin Pauley, I have not seen him try. So those are the grades. Now here comes the remedy. Are you ready? Padres hitters are woefully inadequate with this essential skill of laying down a bunt, but it can be developed. Here's the remedy. Every day at Petco Park, each Padre hitter develops the skill of bunting the baseball for 20 minutes. On the road, each Padre hitter develops the skill for 10 minutes. Each time they are graded with those grades with trends sent to the manager, Mike Schilt. At Petco Park, 25 pitches from the machine, 5 102-mile-an-hour fastballs.
Are you trying to kill me?
5 sliders, 5 curveballs. 5 sinkers and 5 breaking pitches. Each bunt executed, the player gets 4 points, with 100 points being the highest grade. On the road, 12 pitches from the machine, 4 102-mile-an-hour fastballs, 4 sliders, 4 curveballs. Each bunt executed, the player gets 8.3 points, with 99.6 points being the highest grade.
I hate you.
How dare you, dude?
In the beginning,
you should see my
in the beginning,
heart
they're
right
going
now.
To be wearing protective gear because you can get seriously injured learning how to bunt, especially with 102-mile-an-hour fastballs from the machine. Later on, though, without protective gear.
Sounds like a good use
in
of time.
In only 2 months, we will see a new dimension of winning on this team, courtesy Steve in Coronado.
It's weird because you would think that the good teams in Major League Baseball would, if it bred... Here's the thing about baseball, Steve. They know what they're doing, and they know the best capable the way to score runs. The easiest is to not give away outs. Giving away outs inherently is pretty dumb. Now, there are exceptions to every single rule. There really are. There are exceptions. There are times when a sacrifice bunt potentially is needed. The San Diego Padres are currently tied for 6th place in sacrifice bunts with 4. This season, the worst team in baseball, the Chicago White Sox, have the most with 8. The Cardinals have, they're tied with the Cardinals at 8. Then the Pittsburgh Pirates, then the New York Mets, then the Oakland A's. Then the team we face tonight, the Arizona Diamondbacks with 4. It may be, in your opinion, a lost art form. There's a reason that it's a lost art form, because it doesn't work enough to make it to where you would want to go spend hours and hours and hours and hours taking 102-mile-an-hour fastballs learning how to bunt them.
And while I do appreciate Steve's detail, here's where it loses me. If you did that 20 minutes per day, that's, you know, 2+ hours a week that you're spending just on bunting, when I think there's actually more important things you could be doing, you know, analyzing video of the pitchers you're facing, other skills that you could be working on that are actually more valuable right now in baseball than devoting that much time toward bunting. Remember, all these guys, they're playing 162 games or close to it. It's an exhausting season. And to add this to what is already an exhaustive schedule, I think would do more damage than good, even if you did improve your bunting skills overall.
Ben says he appreciates Steve's passion for the game. I bet Steve hates the DH as much as I do. I don't know that. I'm one of the most passionate baseball fans I know. And I like to bunt. Why? Because I'm a terrible hitter. Bunting is for terrible hitters. On no planet should the first 7 names you read ever square to bunt a baseball. Never.
Should Fernando Tatis Jr. never lay down a bunt the rest of his career?
Not a sacrifice bunt, Paulie. If he looks up and the third baseman is playing deep short and the shortstop standing behind second base and third base is wide open, drop one down, get you a knock. I have no problem with that. No problem with that. But sacrifice bunting and giving away outs is dumb.
I also have to throw in the extensive scoring system, which I'm always a big fan of complicated scoring systems, but when each bunt is worth 8.3 points with a maximum of 99.6 being the highest grade, Steve, you might be getting a little too in the weeds here terms of the bunting practice. If you're going to ask Tyler Wade, and Tyler Wade has laid down a few for base hits.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, practice it a couple of times. I'm sure he does. He tries to drag him. He's been praised for that skill. You gave him a C. I would think Mike Schilt would give him a much higher grade on what he does. It's still hard to do. Even if you practice it against the guys that have a ton of movement and deception and how hard they throw, it's never going to be an easy skill. This is not the old days where the fastest fastballs were 91 and they could bunt them with ease, you know, in 1968. It's always going to be hard, no matter how much you practice, to bunt a cutter that is coming in at 97 and dancing through the zone. It just isn't as easy as it was when we were growing up. That's just the truth.
Well,
and so now when you try to lay down a bunt, you're also not only are you giving up an out, but you're trying to do something that is actually really hard against really good pitchers, and you may not even get the bunt down to begin with.
Yeah, again, time and place, certainly. It's you've seen it, you know. It's not like they haven't tried it and sacrificed. And I think it's led to one run this season, if my memory serves, maybe one. So 1-for-4, you know, in that regard. Love the sac fly. I love a productive out. A productive out is fantastic. But giving one. Here, take this. I'm going to give you this one. And you only have 27 to play with.
But, you know, a sac fly, if it's hit really well, can be a home run.
That's exactly right.
A bunt that's hit really well may turn into a single.
Jerkson almost bunted one for a double the other day. But again, like that drove me nuts, too. The guy's 3-for-3, and he's up there, and he's laying one down. Look, element of surprise, I get it. Like I said, time and place for everything. But when I look at the San Diego Padres, or really any baseball team, the last thing I think of is, we got to get some guys in here to lay a bunt down. Really, I mean, honestly, it's not going to win you more ball games. And if it did, they would do it more. Honestly, that's what it boils down to.
They like winning.
They like winning
as much or more than we all do. 100%. They want to win.
It's more important to them in every different facet, financially, for everything.
Prestige, everything.
Yes, you want to win games. Yeah. If they thought it would help. That practice,
they'd be light. They'd be doing it more. They'd be doing 2 hours a day on bunting if they thought that was the difference in making them win.
There is no question about it.
All right, who does Ken Rosenthal have the Padres possibly trading? Get to that and some things Ben likes after our last check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So in his new column this morning, The Athletic, Ken Rosenthal talks about who could be surprise sellers at the trade deadline. Teams you're not really thinking about right now. Like last year, the Mets were a surprise seller and got rid of a bunch of their players at the trade deadline. And as he goes through the column, he gets to the NL West and he says, not the Rockies. Wouldn't be a surprise if they sold, and they don't really have anyone to sell that anyone's interested in anyway. So he starts going through the other teams, like the Giants. He goes, after all they've committed, they're pretty much invested. They can't really sell at this point. The Diamondbacks, well, they're probably going to get healthy and expect to be contending. If everything went wrong for them, then maybe they'd sell off a little, you know, cash to save some of their investment, but they're probably not selling either. Dodgers, no, not going to happen. So that leaves him with the San Diego Padres. The thinking here is that at least one team in the NL West will flop. The Padres, considering their lack of depth, are operating with perhaps the thinnest margin for error. Their massive investments in Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Xander Bogaerts perhaps will make them more likely to buy than sell. But payroll was a concern all offseason, and they could move Dylan Cease when he is still eligible for two pennant races and possibly get back as much as they traded him for.
Maybe even my least favorite segment we've ever done.
I'm just
Bunts and trading Dylan Cease.
And that was Ken Rosenthal's take as to possible surprise sellers and guys who could be on the market this summer in Major League Baseball. Doesn't mention anyone else that the Padres would be talking about trading this summer.
It's like they're willing it to happen. Listen, I hope my point. Did you get my point yesterday in the roundtable? Chris Ella was talking about, I need to see, you know, 50, 60 games from these guys to see if they're worthy of going out and adding a bat or whatever it may be. And my point, and I wasn't trying to be a jerk at all. I hope that nobody took it that way. My point is, when you commit long term to several, several players on your team. I feel like you're kind of always in it. You know, if the Padres are hanging around, I just feel like this team is going to constantly be looking to add. Now, look, if we're out of it, and we're out of it, and you don't see yourself re-signing a Dylan Cease, okay. I mean, it's not the
I mean, you got him for next year.
You got him for next year, too.
But Kim, he's a free agent.
Free agent.
Yeah, you'd be talking about him if you're out of it. For sure.
Yeah, if you're out of it. But if the Padres hang around, I don't need to see some 10, 12, 15-game winning streak to think, you know, this team needs to add. No, they need to add, period. If they're hanging around, yes, I'll be pissed if you don't. And A.J. Preller is really... Last year, really, the first year he's ever bought really around the margins and didn't make a huge, huge splash at the deadline.
I will let Annie and Elston tackle the rest of this. They're coming up next. I don't know if it's the song or just the regular version.
What did you guys like?
I like the song.
Let's finish with some things. The AI song version of things Ben likes.
I like a juicy, sweet strawberries. I like a good marching band. I like a good thin pancake. I like a Nickelback song or two. I like the barbecue chicken pizza. I really like those seeds. I like a midnight buffet. I kind of like the smell of soft scrub, like more of a small derriere. I like cake, I like it. I like both the hamburger and a cheeseburger. I like clocks, I like how I've kind of set up my life. I like grasshopper pie, oh no. I like a creamy. I like good firm banana. I like just looking out the sea. I like moist. I like curry. I like big butt salad, fried Brussels sprouts. I like more of a firm feel. I like Nordstrom. I do like musicals. I like pepperoni. I like nice hotels. I like Nick getting the starts of day.
Especially when the Padres beat
him. I like Nets, yeah. Steph Curry. I like that song. I like Squirt.
Whoa.
I like Sake. I like San Diego State. I like a straight up.
Now, we played that earlier in the show, and you're like, we're talking about like this is created with AI,
yeah.
And you just give them a prompt.
Yeah, can you change the format?
Yeah,
though?
Woods was like, I want 90s grunge, Ben.
No, really? Well,
ladies and gentlemen, ask and you shall receive.
I like a juicy, sweet strawberry.
Just like Nickelback.
I like a good marching band.
It's identical
like
Nickelback. The words are a little better and deeper.
Like Nickelback song, too.
God, it sounds just like them. Holy smokes. Pretty scary.
It is really
pretty.
I don't like it.
I really don't either. It's unsettling.
All right, we will be back Monday morning at 6 a.m. Or maybe just pretty decent AI versions of the three of us. We'll be back Monday morning at 6 a.m. And you'll never know. We're off on the golf course and someone else is
handling
our show at some point.
Working on that right now.
Do we still get paid? Probably not. That's the problem. All right, Annie and Elston are coming up next. It is a Friar Friday continuing. Jay Cronenworth later on with Gwen and Chris. For our executive producer and imaging director, Paul Reindl. For Stephen Woods, I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great weekend from all of us at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.